What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all levels of professional baseball to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, the Tool Shed podcast has you covered with rankings, player analysis, and in-depth discussion. And now, here's your host, Eric Cross.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed Podcast, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 429. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Eric Cross. You can find me on Twitter at EricCrossMLB, and the show is at Tool Shed Pod. Doing first base dynasty ranks today. I have another great guest with me here in the Tool Shed. He is a host on the Prospect Warehouse Podcast and a writer at Fantasy Pros, creator of F-Scores, at Fantasy Ace Ball on Twitter /X, Mr. Tim Kanak. Tim, how's it going, man?
Yo, yo, what's up? It's almost Christmas. This is the pre-Christmas podcast run. Like before we started recording, I was like, this is my third podcast of the day. You've been on a magnificent run, magnificent seven podcasts, like back to back to back.
Pretty much.
Not just today, but like over the last week. So it's like, this is get it in before Christmas. Get as many as you can in, because like I'm going to go through a dead period of a few days where I'm not doing anything. So that's what's happening.
Yeah, that'll be me in the next couple few days. I mean, for everyone listening, this is dropping on Friday, but we're recording on Tuesday. So hopefully nothing notable happens that, you know, screws everything up that what we say today, because, you know, get another 72 hours before this comes out. But yeah, it's currently right around 5 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday evening. But of course, with, you know, Christmas, you know, both Tim and I have kids, so recording on, you know, Christmas Eve or Christmas just obviously is not plausible. But yeah, I mean, starting like I think it was Friday before last, I think was when my run started, and I've done like 7, 8, 9 pods in the last 9, 10 days, whatever the heck it's been. So yeah, but nice to have a little break the next couple of days. But we got a fun episode here with a first base dynasty. A lot of obviously great names here, some young names, some old names, pretty good mix at this position. Did the first base prospects version of this on Monday, episode 428. That was with Chris Welsh. If you missed that, go back and check that out. But we'll hit the major league dudes here today. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. You can find all of my content either on Rotoballer or on my Patreon, toolshedfantasy.com. Make sure you check out all of the great content over on Rotoballer. With Rotoballer's premium pass, gain access to expert tools and advice from proven winners, including TeamSync, lineup assistant tools, free agent finder, prop picks, and the number one DFS lineup optimizer. Our premium pass comes with a 100% money back guarantee. Go to rotoballer.com/radio and use the discount code toolshed to get 10% off at checkout. All right, let's hop right into it here with our personal top 10 rankings at this first base spot for Dynasty. Tim, who you got?
All right, number one. I did it. I've got Nick Hertz number one. I'm that guy. So I got Nick Hertz one, Vlad Guerrero Jr. two, Ben Rice three, Bryce Harper four, Rafael Devers five, Pete Alonso six, Michael Bush seven, Tyler Soderstrom eight, Jack Caglione nine, and Matt Olson 10. And I should preface, I guess, that that's a 3-year dynasty rank, because I do have a 3-year dynasty ranking and then a 5-year dynasty ranking. So I actually do two sets of dynasty rankings. So that can be a little complicated, but it's just like longer horizon versus shorter horizon. I figure I'd give all you fine people the 3-year rankings today.
Yeah, but mine are, I mean, I think I try to blend like immediate impact, 3-year, 5-year, but I think the biggest kind of piece of that pie is my 3-year kind of how to think they're going to be the next 3 years. So I'm definitely kind of right with you there. I also have Nick Kurtz at number one. It's funny. I put a poll out on Twitter from the Toolshed account on there, just asking, you know, who do you think is the number one guy for Dynasty at this position? Just between these two, I think that's the only two options right now, Nick Kurtz and Vlad Jr. Still some time left in the poll as of when I'm talking right now. Still 15 hours left in the poll, but right now it's 53%. Kurtz, 47% Guerrero, and some of the comments are, you know, oh, how can anybody already have Nick Kurtz after one season? You know, I get it. We'll get into that here in a minute. But yeah, I also have Nick Kurtz 1, Vlad Jr. 2. Then that next tier is actually a pretty sizable tier. I have Pete Alonso 3, Rafael Devers 4. You know, he's joining the first base ranks here of the season. Josh Naylor at 5. Bryce Harper 6, Matt Olson 7, Ben Rice 8, Tyler Soderstrom 9, though he'll probably be losing eligibility after this year. I mean, you'd assume so, but still eligible heading into 2026. And Michael Bush at number 10. And all those guys are in a pretty sizable cluster here, but let's start with, you know, Kurtz versus Vlad. I mean, I get it. The people that, you know, are saying, oh, how is it, you know, you have a guy coming off his rookie year already number one. But at the same time, that was one of the best rookie years we've seen, at least in my lifetime. It's definitely up there. I mean, 290, 383, 619 slash line, 36 bombs, 489 plate appearances. I think he was number one in all of baseball in WOBA and WRC plus after, I believe it was like May 20th. So like after his first few weeks, that's higher than Ohtani, higher than Judge, higher than everybody. He was number one in both of those. And a lot of red on the Savant page, though. Now, there's some issues with the whiff and the K rate a little bit higher. You know, Vlad coming off another good, typical Vlad season. 96 runs, 23 bombs, 292, 381, 467 slash line, and also a lot of red on that Savant page. Still very young, 26, and Kurtz is 22 right now. So both still very young. So how close is this for you, Tim, and you know, what made you, you know, confident to put a guy coming off again one season of under 500 plate appearances number one already at this position?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely like not like an automatic, right? It's something I had to think about for sure before I did it. But I think that the main driver of this is angles. Like Nick Kurtz just gets to so like way more optimal angles than Vlad. Like for instance. It's not like they're crazy. It's not like he's Isaac Paredes, you know, pulling the ball all over the place, but they're more standardized angles, I would say. Whereas like Vlad actually hits the ball on the ground a lot more than people think he does. His career, he has a 48% ground ball rate. Last year was 46.5. So he's hitting the ball on the ground a lot. And part of me is like, okay, when he gets older, he's going to be losing more speed and it's going to be harder for him to run out some of those ground balls that turn into hits. So the batting average is going to go down. And unless he starts pulling the ball in the air a lot more, you know, going like old, you know, like old version of Joey Votto kind of, and just like selling out for power, then he's just not going to be as good of a hitter. Obviously Kurtz has a 5-year difference on him. So he's much younger. He hasn't gotten to his peak yet. He has better angles at this time. He's not hitting the ball as hard as Vlad, and he probably doesn't have as high of a batting average upside now. But I think that by the time that we're at the back end of this 3, 4, 5 year kind of window that most people look at for Dynasty, he's going to be much better of a player. And then on top of it, you've got the stadium angle, right? Like Nick Kurtz is playing in a much better hitter stadium right now. Like maybe the best. Like,
yeah,
we don't have enough data to really like park factor it against Coors and Great American Small Park yet, but those are the three right now. Really, it's, you know, Sacramento, Colorado, and Cincinnati are like the three, you know, band boxes for hitters right now.
Yeah, no, it definitely helps when you're playing in like a minor league ballpark for the next couple of years before they head over to Vegas. But yeah, you know, I think that's like the one thing basically separating Vlad Jr. from, you know, being a total reincarnation of his father was, you know, Vlad Sr. was just, you know, obviously hitting the ball super hard, you know, great contact skills. Same thing with Jr., but Sr. would elevate the ball a lot more consistently. And unfortunately, we don't have all the data, you know, back then when Vlad Sr. was playing as we do now. But yeah, you could absolutely say that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is safer. I mean, that is easy to say because he's shown just, you know, several years. It's crazy that he's been in the league for 7 years now. That is just absolutely bonkers to think about. But first off, he plays all the time. I mean, he has not missed over, let's see, the most he's missed in a season since he got into Major League Baseball was 6 games, which was this year. I mean, 156, 159, 156, 160, 161, all 60 games in the shortened season, and then 123 after he debuted back in 2019. So he stays on the field. He gives you that batting average floor. I mean, for the most part, you know, it's 290 plus. You can pencil that in. You know, with 25 to 30 home runs, he's kind of settled into that range, which I think it's fine. I mean, he was the top dog the last couple of years at this position. Didn't think anybody was going to really upseat him this quickly, but then Nick Kurtz was like, you know, hold my beer and watch me do my thing, and just mashing home run after home run, 22 home runs off fastballs. He can hit home runs off breaking balls and off speed, even though, you know, a little bit of a higher whiff rate against those, but higher air rate, higher pull air rate, as you mentioned. So yeah, it'll probably be a lower average, you know, for Kurtz, even though their averages were very, very close this year, or at least closer. Actually, yeah, they're only 2 points apart, 292 to 290. I expect that gap to widen. I think Vlad probably stays in that range. You know, I'd say even with the ballpark, Kurt's probably, you know, more like 270, you know, moving forward. But if he's giving you 40-plus home runs, I mean, is it crazy, Tim, to think that Kurtz could hit 50 home runs next year? Is that crazy to think that?
No, it's not. People forget. It's not like unheard of. Like Pete Alonso had 50 home runs in his rookie year. I think he had 51. So, no, it's definitely possible, especially in that stadium. And especially with what he's shown now. I mean, like, is he going to be as good last year or next year as he was last year? I think that's just something you have to take into stride. Like, okay, he's probably going to have much better counting stats because he's been playing more games. But on a slash line, is he going to be as good? I kind of expect that plate skills will improve. He ran a 364 BABIP. He's probably not going to do that again. So batting average will probably go down. But I expect power to be the same, if not better. He reached new max EVs last year than what he did in his little, you know, minor league small sample size or whatever in 2024. So, like, I expect, you know, as he ages, power will get better. And maybe swing decisions will get better. So maybe even though the BABIP does go down, he will have better contact rates, better zone contact rates at least. So, you know, counting those things all together, yeah, I think that it's, you know, it's still possible that he's as good as last year or better. And of course, we have to extrapolate that based on plate appearances. So once you extrapolate that, yeah, 50 home runs is totally realistic.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely in play for sure. It'd even be better. Like, you know, we talk about how he has, you know, a higher pull air rate than Vladdy, but a lot of his home runs were actually to like center and left, the opposite field. He doesn't actually have a lot of pulled home runs. If you look at his spray chart here, I see 1, 2, 3, 4. Call it like 7, maybe 8 that were pulled home runs. And maybe there's some dots that are kind of overlapping that I'm missing. But, you know, a lot of, I'd say, you know, 2/3, 3/4 of them are to center and the opposite way to left. So, I mean, if he even really leaned into that pull side power even more, I mean, that could be easily 50, 55 home runs. I mean, sky's the limit here with Kurt. So, yeah, maybe he's 20, 30 points below Vladdy in average. But I also think there's a good 15, 20 more home runs to be had here with Nick Kurtz. So yeah, that's why I go ahead of him or ahead of Vlad with him. But I mean, they're both very close to my overall rankings. You know, they're both top 25 overall guys. So both in tier one, easily the tier one at this position. But then after these two, it really opens up. I mean, we each have different number threes, and your number three is someone that, you know, everyone listening should know that I am insanely high on right now in Ben Rice. So let's talk about him right here, because, you know, even though he's still catcher eligible and everyone would love him to keep that, it does look like he's probably first baseman long term and probably losing catcher eligibility after this year. We'll see. That's not a guarantee by any means, but you know, the metrics are just loud across the board. Like no major red flags, like no like high whiff rate or K rate like we had with Kirch or anything like that. It's just red after red after red slider on his Savant page. 26 bombs last year in 530 plate appearances. We're talking about a 255, 337, 499 slash line, which is good, but really you dig into those metrics, and that's when it gets really exciting. You know, he was in the top 11% of hitters in xWOBA, xBA, xSlug, average EV, barrel rate, hard hit rate, sweet spot rate, squared up rate, and chase rate. And then bat speed, whiff rate, K rate, walk rate were all like top 38%. So just a lot of good here with Rice, but we're, you know, obviously you have him third, so you're very high in him, and I'm actually kind of mad at you for having him ranked higher than me, because that's just not, you know, that's not allowed in the Ben Rice world with how high I am. But, you know, how do you think he long-term kind of settles in value-wise at this first base spot? Like, do you think he can maintain that top five level moving forward?
Yeah, as long for the foreseeable future, he's going to be in New York. So as long as he's in that stadium, then I think there is definitely a major possibility of him staying in this, you know, top 3 to 5 range. I don't think it was a 1 year wonder thing. So when I first do my rankings, just like a little bit of an inside baseball here, I kind of just, you know, write down names and I'm like, okay, these are the names of the first baseman that I think it's going to play out. So I'll just put the names down first. Then once I do that, then I'm going to really dig in. So like my first thing I do is I'm going to put name value. When I did that, I had Ben Rice at like 6 or something like that. But then when I started really digging into the stats, I just kept pushing him further and further up.
Yep.
Because I was like, okay, Ben Rice against Pete Alonso. Of course, Alonso was not signed at the time that I had done this ranking because he just signed like a week ago. And I wrote this up a few weeks ago. So I'm, you know, trying to push them against each other. Maybe I give Alonso a little more credit now that he's in a really good lineup, but it's not going to be that big of a difference. You know, Rice is 4 years younger, so you have that on his side. But I put these guys up against each other. I'm like, Rice versus Devers. Devers is in a really bad hitter's park. Rice is in a really good hitter's park because Yankee Stadium has the third best park factor for home runs for lefties, and Ben Rice is a lefty, so you gotta love that. And then here's one that I, you know, a little stat that I found interesting. His hit tool is just so good, Eric, that he had a 90% zone contact rate, which is higher than Vlad, who were just gushing about how good Vlad's hit tool is. And that was like the reason that we were considering Vlad over Nick Kurtz is because of the hit tool. But Ben Rice actually has a better zone contact. He's more aggressive in zone too, 67 zone swing versus Vladdy's 64. So he's not only better at hitting the ball in the zone, but he's more aggressive in the zone. He's hitting the ball almost as hard. So you're not really losing anything on EVs. Like Vlad has a higher max, but Rice has a higher average exit velocity. So it's kind of, you know, like max could happen one time. It could just be like a one-time event. You know, Vladdy put a 120 up. So it's like no one's going to beat that unless you're O'Neill Cruz. And then as far as angles, Rice has angles more in line with Kurtz. So he's getting better angles on the ball on top of it. So talking about air pull, Ben Rice, a lefty in Yankee Stadium, had a 47% pull rate last year. So he's pulling it and he's hitting the ball more in the air than Vladdy. So like even him against Vladdy, it's kind of tight, like almost pushing him to number two because he was that good and his hit tool was that impressive last year. And the fact that he's going to get regular reps and not get like cornered in at catcher, which was kind of like the fear, you know, with him for a couple of years, like a lot of people really liked him, like kind of the stuff he was doing under the hood. But he got full-time ride. And I think that, you know, he made the best of it and he's in his prime right now. So why would you want to miss out on that prime when you have such a good hit tool in a stadium that is perfect for him?
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. I mean, I've said it before on this podcast, you know, I kind of became enamored with the bat when I saw him, you know, in Double-A, you know, which was what, 2022 or three, I forget what year it was, but he just, you know, they came here for a week, you know, 6 games and he just mashed. Even his outs were loud, you know, he was in control of all his bats. And I'm like, man, this guy is someone that I'm insanely impressed by. And it's just continued to manifest from there. And, you know, you mentioned like the profile is just so good all across the board, where literally if you put, you know, his sliders next to Vladdy's Savant sliders and pulled like, hey, which set would you like more? I mean, it'd probably be close, or maybe even favor Rice. And the reason why I haven't put him ahead of Vladdy yet, and I think, you know, obviously nobody has, is obviously Vladdy has a lot longer track record, and we're going off of kind of this 1 year of Rice, and we got, you know, 6-7 years of Vladdy. So, you know, it'd be foolish to put him ahead right now, even though we might want to. And I want to put him even higher myself. But, you know, this whole section was just really hard for me because you got so many good names. Like, these guys are like potential Hall of Fame names. You know, like Pete Alonso could be a Hall of Famer, Devers could be a Hall of Famer, Harper, Olsen, you know, all these guys could be Hall of Famers. You know, these four that I have ahead of Rice, but you know, they're all a little bit older. You know, Devers is still 28, 29, so he's not super old, but you know, we have three guys kind of in this top 10 that have been elite options for so long, but now they're getting, you know, a little bit older. So kind of transitions into, you know, these guys here, you know, with, you know, the Alonzos, the Harpers, the Olsons of the world, and even Freddie Freeman, though he's obviously 36 now. You know, when do you start looking to maybe start selling these guys in a dynasty league, Tim? I mean, obviously, if you're contending, you know, it doesn't really make sense to sell a Bryce Harper right now, who he was to be 33, but is still, you know, one of the better hitters in the game, you know. But even just these guys in general, like that 32, 33-year-old window. I mean, Corey Seager is in that window now, like Trey Turner. A lot of these guys that have been early round assets for so long, and it can be hard to let go of one of those guys, right? You know, especially if you've had them on your team. Like, I've had Bryce Harper on my home league, keeper league team since I literally drafted him the, you know, winter after he was drafted in Major League Baseball. So I've had him since, like, what was that, 2010, I believe it was, 2011, whatever. So I've had him for so long, but I'm getting to the point where I'm like, all right, I guess I'm thinking about life after Harper. Yeah, take me through your process with just dealing with guys like these, you know, Alonzo, Harper types that are getting a little bit older.
So last year, I spent a ton of time doing like aging curve data studies. What I did was I grabbed a bunch of data myself and took it year over year over year over year for like a number of years. And then basically what I did was I took WRC plus, because you just want to look for like one standard stat. You don't want to look for every single stat, or else it's going to take forever. But I used WRC plus as a basis, and then just found out like basically what years people started dropping off, and then just popped it all into its giant table, like all that data. And what I found was that there's like three primary drop-off points for hitters. You've got your first drop-off point is like age 31, which is just like your standard starter, right? Like that's just like your standard player starts dropping off at 31. All these guys we're talking about are not your standard player. These are all stars. Your all-star drop-off starts happening at age 34, 35. That's when you start seeing decline with your all-stars. And then your Hall of Fame types start dropping off at like 38. So those types usually drop off around 38. And from the data that I've looked at in my thought process, the guys with the better hit discipline combination are going to last longer than the guys who don't have that skill set. So for instance, just using my F scores as an example, my F score is 100 is average. Like for this year, Bryce Harper has a 112 hit and a 106 discipline score, which are both well above average, versus Alonso is a 98 and a 98. And then Olsen is a 105 and a 104. So what that tells me is, even though Harper is 2 years older than Pete and a year older than Olsen, Harper's a Hall of Fame lock pretty much at this point. Like I would not expect, unless it's injury cause, like I would not expect major downturn in his production. Like you're going to get 1 or 2% less year over year just as age is happening, but you're not going to get that total arrow. This guy just falls off of a cliff, I don't think, until he's like 37, 38. So I think that, you know, within the next 3-4 years with Bryce Harper, pending injury, I think we're still pretty safe. Alonzo and Olsen, I'm a little bit more skeptical on. I think those might be like the guys who drop off at 34, 35, especially because of the strikeouts. Like Olsen will walk more than Alonzo, but he strikes out more too. and he's a year older. So I kind of would give Olsen only more like a two. Like I'm only comfortable with Olsen for like another 2 years, really. Whereas Alonso, I'd give him like another three or four. Also, Alonso's kind of a goofball. And like, I don't know. I just feel like the way he is, he's like a gamer goofball, kind of like, I don't know. He's very interesting guy. I think he might last, you know, as a good guy till he's like 35 or 36. But that's maybe a little biased, just me liking his personality. And like, you know, I know he's a gamer and he's like obsessed with baseball. And like, really, it seems like that's all he cares about. Whereas like Olsen is a little more reserved and quiet. Like we don't hear as much from him, but like we know, because Alonso goes on like foul territory all the time and stuff like that. He's always talking about like all the stuff he's doing. So like, you know, that dude is like, his head is in the game still. So it's not like a Chris Bryant situation where he's just going to go to Colorado and like peace out. So, you know, like I give Alonso, like I like Alonso a little bit more, not just because of the 1 year for durability, but because I know where his head is at a little bit more than like Olsen. Not saying like I don't think Olsen's a gamer. He's just not as out there about, you know, his mentality. So,
yeah, no, I that's what I've loved about Alonso too. That's why I've always been a big Alonso guy. And I think I even have my profile picture for a little bit of time, like a week or so on here after he won I think it was his first Derby, when he like ripped his shirt off afterwards. It was just like, you know, that just epitomizes what he's all about. And I love it. Just the passion. So I'm right there with you. Yeah, with, you know, hitters in this, like, you know, the 31, 32, 33-year-old range, I feel like first basemen in general, you know, usually don't drop off as quickly, especially if most of their value comes from the bat. I mean, I'm more willing to let go of, like, a Trey Turner. Now, obviously, Trey Turner has still been really good and still providing early-round value, but a lot of his value is tied up in his legs. So, you know, if he's not stealing 30 plus bags or whatever, he's more like 15 to 20, you know, that loses some value there. Or even guys that just haven't shown great durability, you know, like the Byron Buxtons, the Corey Seagers, because, you know, what are the odds that if they couldn't really stay healthy in their 20s and, you know, early part of their 30s, that it's magically going to get better as they get into their mid 30s. And I'm someone that I'm in my mid 30s right now. So it doesn't get better. So, and I'm not a world-class athlete, you know, a professional athlete either. I'm just sitting here, you know, in my office in my house in Maine, but you know, I don't see guys like that aging as well. I mean, like, look at, you know, Freddie Freeman is kind of like a unicorn. Not many age as gracefully as Freddie. That drop off comes, you know, I'm sure it'll come for eventually for him, but you know, I feel okay about Pete. I feel even okay about Olsen, just because, you know, he's been very, very durable for the most part over the last, you know, half decade or even longer. Harper, who I love, and I love from a skill set more than the other two guys, you know, obviously he's been dinged up. This is the way he plays, even when he's playing first base. He just can't seem to stay on that field for 150-plus games, you know, many seasons. So he's one I am a little worried about, even though I love Harper. You know, he's one of my favorite players ever. Just love the way he plays. I think he's good for baseball. But yeah, I do worry about him a little bit. But in general, these guys, I'm not as worried about as I am with like Corey Seager or Trey Turner, etc. But it's always hard to, you know, make that decision where you got to move on from a guy that you've had for so long, but has done so much good for you, for sure. Last guy to talk about here in this top 10 range, Michael Busch. I mean, what a surprise. You finally get some consistent playing time, and he emerges as being a legitimate starting caliber first baseman for fantasy purposes. You know, had a decent 2024, you know, 248, 21 bombs, but really broke out in 2025. 261, 343, 523 slash line in 592 plate appearances, 78 runs, 34 home runs, 90 RBI, sprinkled in four steals as well. And a lot of good metrics for Michael Busch as well. I mean, quality of contact, very, very good, you know, highlighted by a 17% barrel rate. Also had some pretty decent, you know, enough contact rates too. I mean, not a standout there, but, you know, around league average contact, even a little bit above league average in zone, you know, still walks at a good clip. You know, there's a lot to like here with Michael Busch. You know, do I think there's another level to unlock from here? Probably not, but I'm at least definitely on board with having Busch kind of stick around this top 10 range for, you know, the foreseeable future. He's 28, so still kind of young, even though he didn't really get a shot till he was 26, 27 because of the Dodgers. But What are your thoughts here on Michael Busch? Obviously, you're high on him because you have him top 10. Do you see this, you know, this run of top 10 continuing for him moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty consistent. It's kind of funny. If you look at this year and last year, he really didn't do that much. And even like 2023 when he was with the Dodgers, like the way that he's swinging, his swing decisions has not really changed very much. He's just hitting the ball harder. That's the only difference is you're seeing his average exit velocities and his hard hit rate have gone up. And besides that, and he's pulling the ball a little bit more, really nothing in his entire approach has changed whatsoever. Like he's literally had like, despite like his K rate dropping pretty significantly over the last couple of years, his zone contact rates, his zone swing rates, like his chase, his swing strike rates is all it's all the same. So it's like basically all he's doing is just hitting the ball more consistently hard and then pulling a little bit. And sometimes that'll do it, right? Like we saw JD Martinez, we saw Justin Turner have these breakouts around the same age and he needed playing time. Now he's finally with a team that's giving him the playing time. And then look what happens. It's like, okay, you make a little bit of adjustment to your pull, try to, you know, get some bat speed up, hit the ball a little bit harder and boom to there. All of a sudden that can be the difference between being a, you know, okay, starting first baseman and then being an all-star. So kind of crazy, but that's really, those are the small things that can change a player from a guy who is like borderline fantasy relevant to this guy is a dude that you must have.
Yeah. And it's just been like consistently just getting better across the board. Like you mentioned the quality of contact ticking up a good bit last year, you know, barrel rate jumped 5.9%, average EV a little bit more than 2 miles an hour, hard hit rate about 7.5%. And he did so, like it wasn't like he sold out for power either. I mean, he dropped the K rate by 5%. From 28.5% to 23.5%, while improving his contact rates, both in zone and overall. So the fact that he not only was hitting the ball harder, but making more contact, you know, striking out less, all of that is just very, very encouraging. And you know, these are all tangible changes. So, yeah, again, do I think he's going to be all of a sudden like a top five guy at this position? No. I think he can absolutely stick in like that 6 to 10 range. It's like a mid-range for, you know, first baseman, especially as all these guys start getting older. Some of these young bucks don't, you know, jump up and take some of those spots. Hell, maybe you even see Michael Busch pushing top five value at this position for the next few years. I can absolutely see that. Love Michael Busch. It's just crazy what consistent playing time can do for a guy. I mean, that's what I'm hoping Dalton Rushing finally gets some consistent playing time eventually, whether that's with the Dodgers or elsewhere, because, you know, I like his bat a ton too. So, you know, he's kind of like the new, you know, Michael Busch just completely blocked, but we'll see how that turns out.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. paid for by NHTSA.
All right, let's move on to 11 through 20 in our first base rankings. Tim, who do you got in these spots?
11, I've got Spencer Torkelson. 12, Vinny P, Vinny Pasquantino. 13 is Bryce Eldridge. 14, Jonathan Aranda. 15, Alec Burleson, who is now finally free. 16, Josh Naylor. 17, Freddie Freeman. 18, Kyle Manzardo. 19, Esmerlin Valdez. And 20, Kobe Mayo.
Yeah, Burleson's freed now, but Kobe Mayo is definitely not. But we'll get into Mayo here in a little bit. For me, 11 through 20, I have Vinny P at 11, Aranda at 12. In my rankings, I have Sammy Basayo, first base eligible, though, and maybe I'll take that off eventually. But for now, I have him in there. I have Eldridge 14, Freeman 15, Sal Stewart 16, Isak Paredes 17, Torkelson 18, Josue Briseño, 19, and Yandy Diaz, basically older version of Vlad Jr., kind of, sort of. Older Vlad Jr. light, I'll call him, at 20 overall. But two guys, when I saw your rankings, when you showed them over to me earlier today, two guys that are really stuck out to me that I wanted to talk about in this range. First one is Jack Caglione, because entering 2025, like, there was a real debate between, like, oh, hey, Jack or Nick, you know, Caglione or Kurtz. I mean, I think that was actually like a legit debate to have. And I was always, you know, more Kurtz than Cags, but I thought it was fairly close, you know, for the most part. And now it obviously is not, because Kurtz is number one or number two, depending who you talk to at this position. And Caglione, for the most part, is, you know, not in the top 10, but you still have him in the top 10. I mean, he's coming off a really rough rookie season, 232 plate appearances, 157, 237, 295 slash line, 7 home runs. It did show some decent things under the hood, some stuff to work on. But what did you see from Caglione that still has you, you know, encouraged, you know, enough to keep him in the top 10 at this position here?
Quite a bit, but first I'm going to start this off by just telling people, don't do crazy things and like sell low on Caglione right now, because I had somebody message me the other day. They're like, hey, I have an offer of Jack Caglione for Gage Wood. Should I do it? And I was like, no. And then they responded and they said, oh, too late, I already did it. I'm like, that's crazy. Don't sell low on Jack Caglione. Like, I like Gage Wood too. You got good stuff, but come on. You don't want to sell like one of the, you know, really good young first baseman power hitters for a pitcher who's only pitched 30 something innings in college. Even that's crazy to me. But anyway, Caglione, 172 BABIP last year in the majors, Eric. 172 BABIP. That is not possible. That is the worst luck in the entire world. Like, nobody can run that low of a BABIP. In the minors last year, before he got to the majors, because people are concerned about the hit tool, he was running a 75.3% contact rate and an almost 88% zone contact rate. So nothing really worrisome there. And the chase rate in the minors was only 34%. That's about average. That's not crazy. 34% is about average. If it was in the 40%, then you say, okay, there's some hobby bias stuff going on here. But 34% is about average. So it's slightly below average, nothing to be concerned about. This guy hits the crap out of the ball, almost 12% barrel in the minors. Air pull is at over 19%, 94 average EV, 109.4, 90th, 113.6 max. Like, this guy mashes the ball. And that 172 BABIP in the majors, 210 at bats. It happened for a long time. That is not who he is. Like, this is the time to buy on Jack. Like, you're not ever going to get a better buying point than you are right now. Yeah, he hit the ball on the ground 50%. You don't like that in the majors. Like, you definitely don't like that. But that's not consistent with what he's been in the past. That's an aberration. So when I see things like that, that's just an outlier. I'm not really concerned. I just think if people are going to be selling him for a Gage Wood, every league that you can do that in, you should be trading pitchers all over the place for Jack right now. So that's where I'm at on Jack.
Yeah, it's funny that I'm never in any of these leagues where, as I get a lot of these on my Discord too, or on Twitter, people ask me, like, they'll be like, so completely like, no, don't do that. I'm like, why am I not getting these trade? Like, why is nobody offering me Jack for Gage Wood right now or something like that? But and before I go any further, I know some people are out there thinking, oh, well, Kags is losing eligibility. He probably is in some leagues. I think he keeps it in like Yahoo and stuff. But I want to talk about him here just because, you know, outfield is just so loaded. It'd probably be harder to fit him into that episode. But yeah, he might end up losing eligibility, obviously, with Vinny P at first. But we'll see. Maybe he keeps, you know, plays enough as Vinny P's kind of back up to keep that eligibility. But, you know, Caglione, you know, really it comes down to, like, if you could just look at one metric as like what's the issue, it's that chase rate. And that's always been his Achilles heel coming up through the minor leagues, you know, back in his days at Florida. And then, you know, that came through in spades in this first major league stint with 38.5% chase rate. I mean, the contact skills are actually good, you know, above average zone contact rate, you know, overall contact rates tick below average, but not bad by any means. Like, you'd think you see a guy hitting 157 that he'd have just terrible contact rates, terrible K rate. No, I mean, again, he's above average zone contact and around league average overall contact and strikeout rate as well. He's just so damn aggressive that, you know, it limits him because, you know, while he might put in the bat on the ball, if he's hitting the ball out of the zone, it's not, you know, overly hard contact, and that makes his average EV lower than it probably should, hard hit rate lower than he's capable of. I mean, he's capable of being like that 50%+ hard hit rate, 93, 94 average EV guy. If he ever were to learn some patience, and I'm not even saying get to like, you know, Juan Soto levels, but just cut that chase rate by like 4 or 5%, get it to like the low 30s or something like that, I think that would just do absolute wonders for Caglione. So yeah, right now it is just value has dropped off because it's the what have you done for me lately, you know, mentality. And you know, when these prospects come up and don't immediately hit the ground running, it's like, oh well, maybe they're not good or something like that. Prospect development is not linear, growth is not linear. And, you know, Cags has his issues, absolutely, but there's still a ton of upside here. So, yeah, given that, you know, the value is so low right now and the price tag along with it is probably pretty low in your leagues, I would also be looking to try to buy low on Caglione. The other one here, you know, I'm sure some people kind of heard this guy where he was ranked and wonder, you know, why does Tim Kanak hate Josh Naylor? I mean, that's a question that I think I want to dive into here with you. Because Naylor coming off a, you know, really good year. I mean, I don't think anybody's just expecting him to steal 30 bags again. I mean, I would bet my house that he doesn't steal 30 bags again. But coming off a 295, 353, 462 slash line, 20 bombs, 30 steals, 81 runs scored, and now back with the Mariners again in 2026 and the next few years. So what made it so you didn't put Josh Naylor in your top 10 here, Tim?
So fantasy sports should be all about what are you going to do for me tomorrow, not what did you do for me yesterday. And Josh Naylor's 30 steals, like you mentioned, is never going to happen again. He has pretty consistently been like a 26 type player, something like that, with a 260 batting average. And just to me, there's better guys. Like I'm just like putting them together and it's like, okay, who do I have right above him? Alec Burleson. I think Alec Burleson can kind of do the same exact thing. And, you know, like Burleson's a couple of years younger, so that'll give him the edge. If he's in the same exact type of guy, a couple of years younger, I'm going to move that direction. So I guess it's just a combination of he's 29. He's not going to steal 30 bags again. I actually like him as a player. He's really fun. He's a goofball too, like Alonso, but even like he's like a crazy goofball, but he's a lot of fun. He's a lot of fun, yeah. So I like him.
Yeah,
like, sure. You know, but I just don't. I don't know. I think he's just like kind of a guy. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I still have him ranked over Freddie Freeman, so I guess that tells you, you know, like I think Freddie Freeman might retire when this contract ends. I don't know. So, yeah, like I don't see the repeat of the steals, and that's where a lot of his fantasy value is coming from right now, is from the steals. And Seattle is not as good of a power park, so like I don't necessarily see a 30 home run season in his future again like he had in 2024 with Cleveland. I think he's more like a 20 homer guy. And so if you're a 26 guy who can hit 260, It's like there's quite a few people who can do that. So it doesn't really make him special. And he's going to be 29. So there's younger guys who can do similar things. And it's just, it is what it is. Like, it's not like I don't like him. It's more just, I think he's kind of mid for the position, I guess, for fantasy.
Yeah, it's really hard to know what you're going to get from Josh Naylor. I feel like year to year, like nothing stays the same. It's like, look at basically all of the major categories. You know, home runs. He went from, 20, 17, 31, 20 the last 4 years. Steals, 6, 10, 6, 30. The batting average, 308 to 243 to 292. It was 256 before that 308. It's just so much fluctuation with him where I don't know what you're going to get. I don't know where the steals are going to be. I mean, he went from 6 to 30 on the steals, and he went from 31 down to 20 home runs. Like, I just don't know what you're going to get, like what the 2026 version of Josh Naylor is going to be. Though he has shown some, you know, obviously some good here and there just in different variations over the years. You know, under the hood has actually stayed pretty consistent. I mean, he's above average, but not gaudy power by any means. Though he did have his new max EV personal high this past year, just under 118. But hard hit rate's been chilling, you know, 40 to 42% the last 5 years. You know, keeps the K rate in check. Doesn't really walk that much. So the OBP, you know, is probably not as high as it should be, but above average contact. But yeah, he's solid. So I get what you're saying. He's definitely an interesting one where he feels like the least sexy of the top options just because none of the metrics under the hood, like, doesn't have the huge power you'd expect from first base. But I think a lot of his value this upcoming year will really hinge on that, on how many steals he gives you. At least, you know, it's probably not going to be zero because he's at least run some, you know, even if his sprint speed is absolutely terrible. He showed that willingness to run. So even if it's not 30 again, which again, I would very much bet against, even if it's like 10, 11, 12, you know, which is a third of what he gave you this year, this past year. I mean, 2010, that's still pretty solid. It's just hard to, you know, figure out what version of him you're going to get each season. But moving on to our last set of 10 here, we got 21 through 30 and still some, you know, pretty intriguing names here for one reason or another. But Tim, who do you got 21 through 30 in your rankings?
So I have Wilson Contreras 21, and I have to preface that this was before the trade. I definitely like him a lot better in Boston's lineup with a lot better players around him and a lot better stadium for him to hit in. So he would definitely move up a couple spots just based on that into that 20 range. But that's who I've got at 21. 22, I've got Ryan Clifford. 23, CJ Kafis. 24, Spencer Steer. And talking about Steer here, I did not have Sal Stewart ranked for first baseman. I know he played a lot of first base last year, but I kind of see his long-term home at third. So, I mean, maybe I'm wrong on that. And they, you know, make Noelvi the third baseman long-term, but I didn't place him as a first baseman. I placed him as a third baseman in my dynasty rankings. Then next is Jonathan Long, Miguel Vargas, Tommy White, Nolan Shanwell, Luis Arias, and Tristan Casas.
Good old Tristan Casas. You know, for me, I got Andrew Vaughn, 21, Burleson, 22, Alec Bohm, 23, who is probably the least exciting option out of this entire top 30, but Colt Keith, 24, Manzardo, 25, Kobe Mayo, 26, Casas at 27, Spencer Steer at 28, Jonathan Long at 29, and Charlie Condon at 30. And this takes me to right around 250. In my overall dynasty ranking. So right in the middle of my top 500 overall. But again, there are some fun names in this section of rankings. We'll start with a guy I kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, Kobe Mayo. I mean, guy that was starting to get a little bit of some consistent run down the stretch last year. And he was okay. You know, not great, not bad late in the season, though the overall slash line, 217, 299, 388, not the greatest, but you know, he did hit 301 in September. So in five home runs too. So really some, a little bit of hype was gaining for him entering this year again, but then they signed Pete Alonso and you know, they got Basayo probably DHing. Adley's back. So at catcher, which moves Basayo primarily to DH. So now it's like, all right, where does Mayo fit? It's not going back to third because they got Jordan Westbrook there. Maybe if Westbrook gets hurt again, that could be an option, I guess, if they even want to explore that. But outside of him being traded or an injury, like I mentioned, we're back to kind of playing the waiting game with Mayo to see when he can get some playing time. So at this point, I know we both kind of have him in like that 25 or 20 to 25 range of our rankings here. Would you be looking to buy low on Kobe Mayo right now in a dynasty league, Tim?
I think it definitely depends on the price, but if you can get him for next to nothing, I would say yes, because I still think that the odds are there's a very good chance he gets traded still. I want to say if the Orioles could still use some more pitching, I still think that there's a chance that he gets traded for a pitcher and that will free him up. And you already mentioned, the last month of the season, he had 301, 393, 548 with five bombs. So that's over his last 84 plate appearances. So he was like starting to like finally get it and catch on. Yeah, I mean, he's a little lucky, 386 BABIP during that time span. But even if you have a 270 batting average and you're doing something similar, that's good. That's like on the track that we were seeing from the minors from him, because he was so good in the minors. And I don't think he's a quadruple A player. And this is coming from my F scores don't even like him. So even like my model doesn't like him. But like, I'm just like, I saw what he was doing in the minors and he's better than this. There's going to be a point where he can get it. There's still a chance he doesn't, but if he gets consistent playing time, I think he's going to figure it out. And he's a good trade chip. He hasn't lost all his value right now. Like the Orioles could still trade him for a pretty good pitcher, I think. And if they hold him for another year and he's bad, then they're going to lose on that value. I think now if they want to make the most with that chip that they have no spot for on their roster anymore, like they should trade him this offseason. So I still think that there's a very real possibility that'll happen. And obviously if someone's trading for Kobe Mayo, they're doing that under like the premise that he's going to be a starter for them. Otherwise you're not trading for him. So that's kind of like where I'm coming at with my ranking is like, I still think there's a lot of hope. And I think someone's going to like him and put him in a good spot, because we saw what happened when the Orioles, like you had Stowers and Norby were like nothing burgers for them. They traded him to the Marlins and then all of a sudden they turn into really, really good players. So it's like, find your Marlins here, like Kobe Mayo for Cabrera. Right. And then all of a sudden Kobe Mayo is getting playing time in Miami and he's got the same Stowers Norby thing happening to him down there. So just got to find your Miami Marlins for Kobe Mayo.
Yeah, you kind of stole the words right out of my mouth. I was going to mention Miami. Like, I don't think Baltimore goes out and trades for like a Cole Reagans type, you know, but I could see them trading for Edward Cabrera, or maybe even if they want to go a little bigger, but not, you know, to the Reagans level, like a Sandy Alcantara. You know, it would take more than Mayo to get Sandy, but you know, Sandy's got, you know, he signed through this year with a team option for 2027. So it wouldn't like it would be a huge price tag on Sandy, but it would. If you get like Mayo plus maybe a, you know, good pitching prospect and a lower level guy, I think something like that could get it done with Miami. And I think Sandy would be a great fit in Baltimore. And then you mentioned you get consistent playing time for Mayo in Miami or wherever it ends up being. Obviously, there could be several other places he could go. But yeah, I think it's way too early to be out on Kobe Mayo. I mean, I get it. You know, a lot of the shine has dulled from that, you know, the former top prospect star. But he still has shown in glimpses, especially in September, like we both said, that he can be a solid bat. You know, at the same time, I have cooled on my long-term expectations of him. Like, I don't think he's going to be like a stud quarter infielder, but you know, could he get to be maybe like in the vicinity of like where Torkelson is, where he's like a solid quarter infield type for you, like hitting 240, 250, 25, 30 bombs? Yeah, I think that outcome is still, you know, a possibility and not like a long shot by any means, you know, but then again, I don't think he's going to be like a top 10 option either. So still like Mayo. And yeah, I would buy low just given that I do think the price tag is pretty damn low right now, just given the struggles and people might be tired of waiting around for him, even though he's still only 24. So it's not, he's like 26, 27 or anything like that. But yeah, I definitely would still look to buy low on Mayo, given that the price tag is pretty low. There's, you know, a few more potential buy low options in this range of rankings, Tim, and three that I wanted to kind of ask, see if you're still looking to buy low on these three guys who have all shown some upside, you know, in various ways, but coming off kind of down 2025 seasons. Spencer Steer with the Reds, Miguel Vargas with the White Sox, and Tristan Casas with the Red Sox, who is now kind of blocked by, you know, the recent acquisition of Wilson Contreras. So either any of these three guys you want to maybe buy low on, or maybe none of them? Kind of where are you at on these three?
Yeah, I feel like if the Red Sox trade some outfielders and clear some room, if, like, especially if they can somehow, or even if they just DFA Yoshida at this point, then like I'm going to like Casas more as a DH. Hopefully that would keep him healthy finally, because the power is real. Like, it's still there. He's got good plate skills. He just needs playing time and he needs health. So if he can DH, that's probably the best option for him anyway, instead of putting him out on the field. So like, I'm definitely in on buying Casas if the Red Sox can clear some room for him. Miguel Vargas was actually really underrated last year. Really sneaky, like, corner infield option. If you're in like a 15 team, you know, deeper league and you need a corner infielder, he's kind of a nice little option there. I think I prefer Vargas, even though I have Steer ranked ahead. I think Vargas is basically free. Steer still has like name value attached to him, so you're gonna have to like pay a little bit more of a price to get him. But I think Vargas right now is more or less like free, so it's like a pretty nice option. Same thing with Casas. If the Red Sox can clear that room, then that's like such a screaming buy. Like, that's one of the bigger screaming buys in the position.
Yeah, I want to say it's a screaming buy for Casas, and on talent, it is. I'm just really, really concerned with his durability. I mean, it's been all these weird, fluky injuries where, yeah, you could say, oh, it was fluky, but at the same time, I just got to wonder with his body type, and I'm not saying that he's out of shape by any means, but he's like that big, lumbering frame where I feel like the injury risk is a bit higher on these guys, and he's already shown that at such a young age. So you got to wonder, is that something that kind of always sticks around with him, where he's just, you know, a guy that you can't count on to play 140, 150 plus games? You know, obviously the path to playing time for him right now is a bit murky. I also would, you know, Yoshida's fine. It's just, he kind of just is clogging up a spot on this team. It's funny, like, oh, we don't want to have, you know, one guy locked into DH, you know, with Devers. Now it's like, okay, well, you still have Yoshida, who you don't play on the outfield. And not just because there's too many options, because he's just not a good fielder. So it's kind of, it's like, you know, the guy that he's a square peg in the round hole in this Red Sox team. And if he was gone, nothing against Yoshida, because he's a fine player and all, but, you know, if he was gone, I think they would fix a lot of things for Boston, including, you know, maybe Casas DHing. So I'm still a Casas guy. I mean, people know I'm always a Casas guy. One of my probably worst takes ever was, you know, saying that Casas was going to be above Vlad Jr. You know, it's either that or my Kelnick take. One of those two are my worst ever that I've made as an analyst. But, hey, you can't win them all. But, yeah, I mean, I said those things about Casas for a reason. And, yeah, I was wrong on to that level. But, you know, there's still a lot of good under the hood with Casas. He walks at a good clip, you know, and gets on base and has that power. Just contact is a little iffy. But I still like him a lot. And just given kind of what I was saying about Mayo, given how low the price tag is, why not? If it doesn't work out, you're not gonna lose any sleep over it. You know, you probably didn't give up a lot to get him, but if it does work out, that's a pretty good return on investment. So, you know, I'd be fine buying low on him. You know, the other two, I'm not opposed to Steer or Vargas either. I mean, Steer, I've cooled on. You know, some of the, you know, he hasn't really hit the ball super hard, though. You know, the ballpark absolutely helps, but, you know, Vargas, I feel like if he got out of the White Sox, it would help, but I don't think that's gonna happen anytime soon. But since the price tag on all three is pretty low right now, I'm not opposed to any of them. But if I had to pick one, I'd go Casas first, then Vargas, then Steer right now. But not opposed to buying low on any of the three in general. All right, let's talk about one more guy each here. Our favorite buy at this first base position. Maybe it's someone we've already talked about that you want to go deeper on, or someone we have not talked about yet. But who's a big buy for you right now at this first base spot, Tim?
Yeah, so I'm going to kind of preface that I hate having a bad first baseman. So I always want to go for a good first baseman. Upper tier first baseman that I think is a good value right now is Soderstrom. And a big part of that is just because Kurtz has like completely overshadowed him. So it almost makes him just like a really, really kind of discounted player when he shouldn't be. He had a really good year last year. So for guys in the MLB now, Soderstrom, I'm going to give you a prospect real quick. Ryan Clifford, the Mets didn't bring Alonso back. Jorge Polanco at first. I don't know how that's going to work out. So, you know, Ryan Clifford is on the verge, tons of power there. He could almost be like the Pete, like the next Pete Alonso for the Mets, which I'm sure that was like part of their reasoning of, you know, David Stearns is a smart guy. So I'm sure that's part of the reasoning of not extending Alonso another year is that they had him like right in the wings. So MLB, Soderstrom, and I'll give you prospect Ryan Clifford.
I like that a lot. I'm a big Soderstrom guy, especially the last year or so, because I agree. His season, though, he started hot, got cold, and then kind of finished out pretty well. Definitely got overshadowed by Nick Kerr. Even like a Jacob Wilson was getting more kind of, you know, hype and buzz than Soderstrom was. So, yeah, I feel like his season flew under the radar a good bit.
He had it in the second half, Eric. He had a 300, 358, 495 slash.
Yeah.
Nobody even knows because Kurtz was so good that like nobody even knows how good Soderstrom actually was like right behind him. So yeah. he's like the Robin now. He's like Kurtz's Robin. So it's like everyone's just gonna forget about him. So it makes him a great buy.
Yeah, because you know Kurtz was you know putting up like Barry Bonds esque numbers here over the final 4 months of the season. Nobody kind of knew what Soderstrom was doing. So that's why I love taking advantage of the guys that just get overshadowed, especially like in the prospect ranks where. You know, it's a guy that maybe he's like a back end top 100 guy, but the system has like three top 30 guys. And, you know, like, oh, well, hey, this guy's pretty good too, but everyone's talking about those guys. Yeah, those guys can be some good value. So that's kind of the case with Soderstrom at the MLB level. And I like Clifford too. I saw him in double A this year. Definitely some good power there for sure. Some good picks there. I'm going to go to Jonathan Aranda, who had, you know, was limited to 422. Played appearances last year, but you know, pound for pound was one of the better first basemen offensively this past season. 316, 393, 489 slash line, 14 home runs. Now, he's not gonna give you any speed, so he's 100% reliant on the bat, but it's a pretty damn good bat. I mean, his XBA and X slug are among the best in the league at a 54.5% hard hit rate, 93 mile an hour average exit velocity, and a run around a 13% barrel rate. You know, K rate, you know, it's fine, 25%, a little bit above average league walk rate at 9.7%. Contact rates, you know, a little bit better than league average overall, a little bit worse in zone, but not bad by any means. And so maybe the average goes down. Like, I don't think he's, you know, above 300 again, but I don't think he's a drop down to like 250, 260 either. I think he's like a 270, 280 guy, especially given the quality of contact. If he could just stay healthy for an entire year, I think 25, 30 home runs is possible for Aranda. We've yet to see him play enough, and there's some split concerns here as well. I mean, though he did hit 274 against lefties with a 378 OBP against them, only one home run and four extra base hits total in 98 plate appearances. So there's some concerns there, and you know Tampa Bay loves to mix and match and play their platoons and splits and all that. So you know him getting 650 play appearances is probably slim, but give me like 550, 575 play appearances. That could put you 23, 24 home runs with a 280 average. So, yeah, I don't like him as much as I like, you know, Michael Busch, but if you want a, you know, back end first base, starting first baseman, high end corner infield guy, I think Aranda can kind of settle into that range and still 27 years old. So, still on the younger side. Yeah, so, I like him as a decent value buy just given the fact that he missed some time last year. And I don't think his season kind of got recognized as much as it probably should have as well. But Aranda for me as my breakout here, or my, you know, my buy, I should say. I actually want to do one last thing, a little game with you real quick that I just thought of, just talking about these first basemen and given all the big names here, Tim. I'm going to list off a few names here. You tell me, when their career is all said and done, will this guy be in the Hall of Fame? All right.
Let's do it.
I'm not gonna do the young guys. I'm just gonna do like the 30 plus year old guys. I'm not doing Vlad. Pete Alonso, does he end up in the Hall of Fame?
No.
All right. Rafael Devers.
No.
Bryce Harper.
Yes.
Matt Olson.
No.
All right. So only Harper there is a yes for you, and I'm assuming you're gonna say yes to Freddie Freeman.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's lock.
Yeah, I'm kind of there. I think if Alonso gets the 500, I think he'll probably get in, assuming there's no, you know, roid allegations in the next 5-6 years. But, yeah, I think like Harper, out of the guys, the non-Freeman guys, is the biggest lock there. I think the others have a shot. I think it's obviously how the rest of their career goes. But if they get all up near 500 home runs, I think they have a shot. But, yeah.
Yeah, it just depends on how many years they all end up playing, because guys are retiring earlier than ever. And Alonso broke in as a 24-year-old. So, like, is that late? No, but for Hall of Fame class, it almost might be. I feel like we're running into a period where for a Hall of Famer, do you have to debut now at 20, 21, 22? Like, just to pile up the compiling stats, because they're not going to play to 40 as, you know, the way that they used to. They don't have steroids to help them play to 40 anymore. So it's like, yeah, can they play to 40 as well? No, it's not going to happen. The guys are going to be dropping off, like I said, like 35, 36, 37. And if they're coming up at 24, it's just less years means less counting stats. And like you said, like you hit 500 home runs, okay, you're a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame. If you had 400, not necessarily. Like 400 home runs, you have to do a lot of really good things besides just the home runs to get in. So,
yeah, I mean, like Delgado, like several guys that are like in that low to mid 400 home run range that haven't gotten in. But yeah, just imagine, like, you know, with Alonso starting a little bit later. Imagine if Aaron Judge started before he was 25. I mean, he already could get the 600 home runs as is, but imagine if he debuted at like 21, 22 and had like another, 150, 170 home runs added. Judge could be over 500 right now if he started like 3-4 years earlier, which is scary to think about. But yeah, that's the thing with some of these older debut guys, unfortunately. But all right.
Yeah, combine Mike Trout's 20s and Aaron Judge's 30s into one player. And
best player of all time right there. But that is going to wrap us up. Tim, thank you so much for coming on to talk First Base Dynasty Ranks with me. Before we get out of here, anything you want to plug that you got going on here?
Yeah, so on the X Machine, we just released the top 150 prospects for me, so you can find that. Of course, I've got like slow dribble content coming out, sneak peeks, stuff like that. But if you want the full thing now, you can subscribe to MLB Data Warehouse, and then you'll get all the write-ups, rankings, F-scores, all that stuff on MLB Data Warehouse. So sign up. And then also over there, I've got a draft cheat sheet. So for $29.99, cheaper than a lunch out, you can get all my dynasty rankings, and you can get all the F-scores for all the dynasty rankings for... It's for redraft, for 3-year dynasty, for 5-year dynasty, over 700 prospects ranked. So you get FYP rankings, international rankings. You get all that stuff. Only $29.99 over on MLB Data Warehouse.
Got the tool shed, got the warehouse. A lot of good stuff there. Thanks, Tim. Great stuff. You know, love the work that you do. Everyone should be following Tim and the work that he does, again, on X at Fantasy Aceball. I'll be back with you all again next week for Second Base. Got a couple of guests lined up for those episodes as well. But until then, everyone take care.
Hockey fans, can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.